Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of the podcast for the American Educational Research Association's Classroom Assessment Special Interest Group. I'm Michael Holden, a PhD candidate at Queen's University in Ontario, Canada, and a member of the Classroom Assessment SIG. Our mission as a group and through this podcast is to generate more interest and focus on classroom assessment and all the ways that that shapes teaching and learning. As always, I'd like to begin by introducing our guests before we turn to today's topic, which is formative assessment. So first, we have Dr. Martha Koch. He is an associate professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Manitoba, a city at the edge of the Canadian prairie. I love that description. Martha teaches and does research in educational assessment and mathematics education. She is also the research chair for the Canadian Assessment for Learning Network. Over the years, she has been involved in initiatives to support pre- and in-service teachers, as well as school and divisional leaders as they further develop their classroom assessment practices. She's also published articles and book chapters about that work. Welcome, Martha. How are you?
Doing well, Michael, and really looking forward to our conversation today.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Also joining us today is Tracy Finley, an elementary teacher with the Ottawa-Carleton School Board in Canada's capital city of Ottawa, Ontario. During her 25-year career, she has taught at a variety of grade levels and has served her district as an instructional coach. She's worked on a variety of writing projects with organizations such as the Critical Thinking Consortium and the Ontario Association for Mathematics Educators, and has provided a variety of development sessions on assessment for her colleagues and for pre-service teacher candidates at the University of Ottawa. Hi, Tracy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me, Michael.
Yeah, thank you so much. Delighted to have both of you here with us today. So the two of you have this wonderful shared interest in supporting educators to further develop their classroom assessment practice with that focus on formative assessment. But before we dive into that, could we just start with how the two of you met?
Sure, Michael. Well, Tracy and I met actually last summer when Tracy participated in a summer institute on classroom assessment that was being offered by the Canadian Assessment for Learning Network. I was one of the organizers and I facilitated some of the sessions. Our goal was to bring assessment leaders together from different parts of Canada, people who are developing assessment for learning or formative assessment initiatives in their school or in their district, or in some cases at a faculty of education. And we brought them together so they could continue their work and deepen their learning. We actually spent 4 days sharing experiences, discussing some of the strategies we've all experienced as we try to further develop assessment practices, sharing resources, and also exploring some new ideas in assessment. Now, when we planned it, we intentionally limited the Summer Institute to only 35 people so that each facilitator was able to spend a lot of time with the participants. And that meant that Tracy and I were able to have several conversations about our experiences working with pre-service teachers and faculties of education, but also some of the work we've been doing with in-service teachers in schools and districts in different parts of Canada. And as we talked, we really discovered that we had so many shared perspectives, lots of areas of common ground, and we just knew it would be wonderful to continue to work together.
That sounds great. So Tracy, just picking up on that, what are some of the things that you've been doing then to support educators around formative assessment?
Well, so as you mentioned, I am a classroom teacher, so I'm every day surrounded by my students. And this year, I've actually had a pretty neat opportunity because I was able to do some work on behalf of the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario. And so what that allowed me to do was leave my classroom for a couple of days, and I would go and work with other teachers across the province of Ontario, through different union locals. And so what that allowed me to do was to deliver some in-service around the power of formative assessment. And it was really sort of humbling to watch, because we know how important it is for people to be in that continual mindset of developing their professional judgment. And so together in those sessions, we could explore different ways to gather information in order to improve student learning. And one of the underpinnings of that session or those sessions was an idea that had really resonated with me in my own practice. And it came from Damian Cooper's work over the years, where he talks about this actual word assessment and the Latin root of assedere and how it means to sit beside. And so one of the things that I shared with participants was how I used to have this very arm's length mindset when it came to assessment. And a lot of times when I thought about it, I thought about you know, kids sitting alone in a testing situation. And for a good chunk of my career, that's what I actually thought assessment had to be. So now I shared with them that I try to really approach assessment from Damien's idea of sitting alongside my students. And that shift, I think, has been one of the most powerful messages in these sessions, because for teachers, I've seen how it can be really empowering for them to see how their assessment practices can actually directly impact the effectiveness of their teaching.
Yeah. And, you know, just like you're saying, getting to see that change directly with the students that they're working, seeing that, you know, that learning in real time. I'm wondering, have you seen something similar in your work with pre-service teachers? So do you find their ideas of assessment shifting in similar ways?
So because they're pre-service teachers, I often start our very first lecture, I start by asking them, okay, tell me, you know, what's making you feel nervous? And as you can imagine, a lot of them share classroom management. That's always the number one, but a very close second is always assessment. And a lot of times in our time together in these lectures, many of them do share their experiences of what, you know, might be termed less than transparent grading practices or maybe questionable. And we talk about how those practices have made us feel as learners. And one of the things that I try to do with our pre-service candidates is just encourage them to see that softer side of assessment. I think sometimes they come in and they're anxious. And so there's a focus on tabulation and percentages. And what I try to do is really help them to think about the story of student work and really just to be curious and to be what I call a kid watcher, because sometimes those, or a lot of times, those observations that they're gathering are important data that they need in order to make those just-in-time adjustments. And so I find by letting them know their observations are a powerful tool, it kind of takes a little pressure off them in terms of thinking of assessment as being judge and jury. And so what I try to show them is that assessment is something that we do with our students and not just to our students.
And so could you talk about maybe an example of what does that look like in your own teaching? So you've touched on what that looks like with pre-service teachers, with other teachers that you support in your district. What does that look like in your classroom?
So about 3 years ago, I made the switch from being a grade 4 homeroom teacher to my current position, where I am very honored to be a teacher who supports our newcomers to Canada. And so now I provide small group support to what I call older beginners, because they are usually at the grade 4 to 6 level, but they are definitely at a beginning level in their English development, some of them arriving with no English at all. And the difficulty that I'm seeing there is that a lot of our formal assessments that we're asked to use by our schools, by our boards, are far beyond their English language capabilities. And so these standardized tests and screeners, I'm noticing, are further marginalizing our students. You know, they're coming up red flagged is the term we're using, but it's not actually giving us any information on what they need. And so me as a kid watcher, I'm feeling that part of my job, of course, is to figure out where they are at in their language journey and decide what that next piece of the puzzle is for them. And to me, that's what formative assessment is really at its heart. It's that putting together of those different pieces of observation and feedback and practice until you get to that finished picture of learning.
Right. You know, that idea of, do I have a rich understanding of where this child is in their learning? And you know, what do me and this child and that community together, what do we need to do to build that shared understanding of what we're doing together? Martha, I'm wondering, what do some of these ideas look like in your research and practice? So how do you help teachers with their formative assessment practice?
Sure, Michael. Maybe I'll begin with some of the ways that I'm using formative assessment in my teaching. Whether I'm teaching Bachelor of Education students or graduate students, I build in lots of formative feedback. So for instance, I offer students the option to pre-submit their response to an assignment, or even part of their response, maybe something they're feeling a bit unsure about, so that I can provide feedback that they can consider as they prepare their final draft. I build in time for students to engage in self-assessment and peer feedback. And it's not only that I give them class time for these activities, I share specific self-assessment strategies that they can try, and I introduce some structured ways that they can give constructive feedback to one another. We also discuss ways they might use the feedback they receive in their learning and how all of that can help them to further develop, you know, what we call metacognitive awareness. I want them to experience how formative assessment and self-assessment can deepen their own learning so that they'll see the value of these things in their work as educators. So moving past reading about it to really experiencing it. And one reason I do this is that research shows that the assessment experiences that pre-service teachers have, especially in their teacher education courses, have an outsized impact on the assessment practices that they will subsequently use in their teaching. And so as I try to model these approaches, similar to what Tracy mentioned, what I'm hearing from many students is that they've had pretty limited feedback in their K-12 education and certainly in their prior university courses. And some have had some fairly negative experiences with assessment. So I think it's just essential to give them this opportunity to experience assessment, you know, done in better ways. And I guess one other thing I've been doing in my own teaching is working to reduce the emphasis on grades in my courses. So one way I do that is to have some assignments that students have to submit for feedback, but they're not graded. So they're mandatory but ungraded assignments. And they really provide a chance for students to see that assessment can be a back and forth communication tool, right? Which is a powerful part of the whole learning process. And I call that assessment as dialogue when I'm working with my students. So those are some of the things I do in my teaching that I think are helping educators to better understand formative assessment.
Yeah, you know, walking the walk, modeling for those pre-service teachers, those formative assessment practices that we actually want them to see in their own classroom spaces. Martha, could you talk about some of how some of those ideas are showing up in the research projects that you're involved in? So where these ideas are showing up in the research you're doing on formative assessment?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. One project that I think listeners might be interested in was one that I did with my colleague, Christine Sertem from the University of Ottawa. And in that study, we were meeting with groups of educators about three or four times a semester over a period of two school years. And we were supporting them in trying new assessment practices. In this case, it was specifically in their mathematics classrooms. Participants were actually teaching grades 4 through 12, so a wide range of grades. And over the 2 years, as we met, we gathered lots of data about their experiences with trying out new assessment strategies. And analyzing that data has provided a lot of valuable insights about changing assessment practice. For instance, a lot of our participants stated that dialogue with other educators was the single most valuable resource in helping them change their assessment practice. But our data also showed that the participants were encountering a number of dilemmas as they worked to change their practices. And so, as we analyzed the data, we ended up identifying four kinds of dilemmas that the participants experienced. And we actually adapted a framework that Mark Winschittle had developed in the early 2000s in his work on constructivist teaching. And so what we found was that teachers had conceptual dilemmas where they've sometimes struggled to understand the reasons for making some changes to their practice. But there were also what we call pedagogical dilemmas as they worked to develop the tools and the strategies they need to actually enact those new approaches to assessment. So kind of we call it the how-to part of using new assessment strategies. But kind of wrapped around that, there were also these political dilemmas as some of the research-based strategies that we shared with the participants seemed to be a bit at odds with assessment policy, or at least their understanding of assessment policy in the context where they were teaching. And then finally, many experienced what we call cultural dilemmas, where they found that some students, parents, or other teachers in the school who were unfamiliar with the new assessment practices they were using were sometimes a bit resistant, uncomfortable with the changes that were being made. And so I think what our study has helped people to understand is that these dilemmas are likely to happen and that different kinds of support are going to be needed to navigate each kind of dilemma. Time and resources to develop those pedagogical tools, support from school administrators to help parents understand a new assessment culture, you know, those kinds of things. And we've shared this dilemmas framework at conferences and in some journal articles. And as we continue our work with other educators, we shared it with Tracy this past summer. And many people have told us that they find it quite helpful as they plan for classroom assessment initiatives. So I think that's just one example of how research can help us understand the process of changing assessment practice while also supporting educators who are trying to make some of those changes in their practice.
I really appreciate that idea of that both of you were talking about is how can we support teachers in the really difficult work of assessment, of formative assessment, that, you know, you mentioned these four different kinds of dilemmas that teachers might run into. If I run into that dilemma as a teacher, as a pre-service teacher, it's not, oh, I'm bad at assessment. It's, oh, okay, here's a challenge that I'm having that actually lots of educators have. And now what are the resources? What are the supports that I can tap into? Could you talk a little bit about, with, you know, an example of what that looks like when you're supporting teachers with those formative assessment practices in their classroom?
Sure. I mean, like most education professors, I teach my own courses and I do research, but I'm also working with educators in lots of other contexts. So maybe I'll mention two ways that I've been doing that, one in post-secondary and one that's more K-12. So a couple of years ago, I worked with a group of college instructors from the province of Quebec, so another part of Canada. And the focus was on helping them explore some ways that they might introduce more formative assessment in their teaching. And it was really interesting because the group included people teaching all sorts of different disciplines, nursing and tourism and accounting and web design and, you know, lots of other disciplines. And what we were seeing was that, you know, as we see in research on assessment in post-secondary settings, most of these instructors were focused almost exclusively on summative assessment. But as we worked together, they began to recognize how more use of formative assessment would support the learning process and would ultimately lead to better outcomes for students on those summative assessments, right? So we really worked together to share ideas and find workable, feasible strategies that they could fit into, you know, busy lives. We know how busy all teachers, whether they're in K-12 or post-secondary, are, right? So supporting one another to find feasible ways to do this was really a big part of what we saw happening. And some of those instructors also kind of reconsidered how they were doing the summative assessments, even though we were focused on formative assessment, moving away from their reliance on time tests and exams and beginning to invite students to be more active participants in the assessment process. But maybe I'll just circle back quickly to the K-12 educators for listeners who are thinking about that sort of thing. As I mentioned, I've been working with the Canadian Assessment for Learning Network really since we started the network, which was about 10 years ago. And it's a nonprofit group that's dedicated to sustaining high quality assessment for learning in K-12 and post-secondary schools across Canada. And we bring teachers together to explore research, share strategies, and discuss various topics. Lately, we've been really focused on culturally responsive assessment and what that might look like in our classrooms, how classroom assessment might be seen as the co-regulation of learning, and how that could help us as we're trying to do this work. The Summer Institute that I spoke of earlier, where Tracy and I first met, was one of our recent events as well. But we host in-person conferences, webinars, sponsor educators as well, who want to work on inquiry projects related to classroom assessment. So I think it takes lots of different ways to support the development of formative assessment. And, you know, those are some of the ways that we're helping teachers not feel so alone when they're doing this work and feel that there is a network of other educators to support them.
I really appreciate that. You know, how can we draw on those networks of teachers, either the teachers in my building or the teachers in my district or these other broader networks that I might be part of, you know, to work with other people, to work with other educators who are, again, facing some of those dilemmas together. Tracy, I'm wondering, so as you bring teachers together in these spaces, whether that's through, like you meant, like Martha was mentioning with the Canadian Assessment for Learning Network or these other spaces where you bring teachers together with that idea of assessment as sitting beside, what are some of those through lines or themes that you're seeing emerging in the work that you're doing together?
So I'm definitely seeing beginning to see a connection between assessment and mental health. And if you're listening and you're a classroom teacher like me, I don't need to tell you that our classrooms have a different layer of complexity and sense of urgency than they did 10 or even 5 years ago. You know, first we have that looming sense of where we're trying to make up for lost instructional time of the pandemic. But I think more than that, in conversations with my colleagues across the province, I'm seeing and hearing almost like this rush of teachers and school boards to turn towards packaged publisher assessments. And part of that, I think, is to help fill maybe some instructional knowledge or practice gaps that might be there. And I think my fear is that in our frenzy of, you know, trying to get students caught up, that we're forgetting that power of human connection in assessment. And so one of my favorite quotes about assessment actually comes from a ministry education policy guide, which I know doesn't normally sound like the root of inspirational quotes, but it's titled Growing Success, and it's a document that came out back in 2010 for Ontario to provide K-12 educators with just some general guidelines around best assessment practices and policies. And I've often joked that there's a quote in there that I would literally wear on a t-shirt, because it talks about how assessment is more art than science. And that, you know, as much as we try to make it this crisp and neatly quantifiable process, at the end of the day, it's messy. And it's because it's human communication. And I guess that's maybe one of my biggest fears, is that we aren't going to make the time to talk with students about their learning. And we're simply going to gather the data and report on it, just because we're trying to keep things moving along.
So you talk about this idea of assessment being messy and wanting to make sure that you're understanding this student as a whole person, and this idea of, you know, the relationship between assessment, mental health for students. Could you just share a little bit more about what that looks like for you?
So I think really we need to be talking more in K-12 classrooms about growth mindset and resilience with students, especially when it comes to assessment. You know, one of the things I'm certainly noticing now, and I have an 18-year-old, is that we live in a time where there is instant gratification all around us. And I really am noticing that kids, well, and adults, but kids are losing their ability to struggle, and really to see struggle as a positive thing, as something that you need to grow, especially when it comes to learning. And so, you know, at the beginning of our chat today, I had talked about this empowerment of teachers feeling that they were feeling when they could make this shift to a formative stance. And I think sometimes we need to remember that kids don't always get the same memos we do. And so we need to make sure that they're also able to create this switch in their mindset. And Martha touched a little bit on this earlier when she spoke about the difference that she's seeing with student engagement and risk-taking, you know, just with even the option to resubmit an assignment. So, you know, we need to ensure that our students are willing to take those risks in their learning, and that they trust us enough to know that that risk won't be counted against them.
Right. And that just that sense of safety and trust that assessment and learning are a process, that of course I'm not going to see mastery the first time I try something, that I need that feedback and that practice and that process to guide the work that I'm doing with, you know, the teachers that I'm working with. I'm wondering, Martha, what are some of the ways that you're seeing this come through in your work? Are you seeing similar things?
Yeah, I would say that I have noticed many of the same things as Tracy talked about. I was just thinking about her comments about that tendency to fall back on publisher tests. And I think that kind of relates to, or is another aspect of that longstanding tension between the accountability and grading purposes of assessment and the use of formative assessment to support learning. And I see that teachers are often caught in that struggle. You know, the assessment policies in Canadian provinces, at least, typically do call for teachers to use formative assessment, which is great. But they also require some provincial standardized tests. And unfortunately, the policies don't provide a lot of guidance about how those different assessment purposes can coexist or unfold in a balanced way. And that leaves teachers in a bit of a tight spot. And in fact, this is one of the political dilemmas that was very evident in the research study that I talked about a few minutes ago. So the way I would express that, I guess I would say, is that standardized testing casts a very long shadow, which can overwhelm formative assessment. And I think we need to be constantly working kind of to make sure that doesn't happen through some of the work that we're doing. At the same time, though, I am seeing some movement toward reduced emphasis on grades, and I'll get to how I think that relates to formative assessment. So we've been reducing the emphasis on grades in our faculty at the University of Manitoba by moving to a pass-fail approach in some of the courses where we had previously been using letter grades. And these changes to our summative assessment approach have really impacted the way that formative assessment can unfold in our courses. Students are more willing to move out of their comfort zone on assignments because they're not so worried about making sure that they get that A. They are much more open to engaging with the feedback they receive, and they have more positive relationships with their professors, centered around learning rather than debating whether their work should receive a B plus or an A, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm also seeing that reduced emphasis on grades in K-12 schools. For instance, I'm collaborating with a high school principal who's been working to reduce the emphasis on grades in her school. With the support of her district, teachers now provide feedback, but no percentage grades on the interim report cards. They only assign percentage grades on the final report card, and the process of determining that grade always includes a student conference. So it's unfolding in really exciting ways in that context. Students there can also choose both when and how they will provide evidence of their learning for some of the key learning objectives in the curriculum. So by working, you know, incrementally over a period of several years, the school has made a lot of positive changes to their approach to assessment. And those are changes that have reduced the stress for students. So that aspect of mental health, which Tracy mentioned, is really part of what they're focused on. And the changes also pave the way for students. These are high school students in this case, but to develop their skills in self-assessment, their metacognitive awareness, their sense of themselves as self-regulated learners, right? So, and we're happy to see that other high schools in the district and in some of the neighboring districts have heard about this work, and they've also begun to reduce the emphasis on grades in their schools. So I'm seeing that changes to summative assessment can be a powerful way to open up space for formative assessment to unfold.
And I really, you know, appreciate that idea, you know, that emphasis on de-emphasizing grades, because, you know, yes, we do, most of us operate in spaces where, you know, grading, percentages, accountability, standardized testing, these are realities and they have important purposes. But like you were saying, how do I reconcile those purposes with that focus on formative assessment, that focus on the learning and the process that we're involving students in? And so I wonder, as you go through this work, what stands out to you, or how might we as teachers respond to that dilemma of navigating those different purposes?
Yeah, I think that what is really standing out for me after doing this work for quite a few years, and in the conversations Tracy and I have had as well, is that, you know, changing assessment practice requires that sustained effort and that collaboration among a lot of different individuals and groups. We need to be teaching about formative assessment in pre-service teacher ed courses, but we also need to be ensuring that those students are experiencing formative assessment in their courses. We need to be supporting in-service teachers in developing their conceptual understanding, but also giving them time and resources to help them build the pedagogical tools they need to do assessment differently. And when we don't do that, as Tracy mentioned, they're much more likely to reach for those publisher tests, which, you know, in many cases are not quite as effective as a formative assessment tool. Fostering formative assessment is work that just has to be done by a range of people and educational organizations. Teachers, school and district administrators, absolutely key, but also provincial or state level organizations, teacher unions, as Tracy mentioned, and nonprofit organizations, forms of collaboration between researchers and practitioners, like the work that Tracy and I are doing together. And I know that working with Tracy is really enriching the way that I'm thinking about assessment as well. So I think it's only by working at all levels that we can bring greater coherence in assessment policy, ensure that policy documents do articulate how formative assessment can exist alongside grading and standardized assessments, moving toward grading as a process where teachers are making that professional judgment in dialogue with students and drawn on all of the available information that they have, including what is learned from formative assessment. You know, as Tracy said, being a good kid watcher, right? It's a big part of what happens in formative assessment. And maybe just one more thing, alongside those different things happening in formative assessment, clear communication with parents is essential, right? So that they understand the changes being made in the assessment culture and why those changes are beneficial for their children. Like many complex problems in education, there is no single solution or recipe to follow. Supporting educators in enacting formative assessment is a process, takes time, and requires a lot of different forms of action, including podcasts like this. So we're really glad to have this chance to share some of our work with you and with listeners.
Thank you. I love the plug for the podcast. And I also just appreciate, like you're saying, you know, that it's not just something that teachers need to worry about. Assessment isn't just a teacher concern. It's something for students to be involved in. It's something for parents and guardians to be involved in. It's something for communities to gather and think about. How can we support students in their learning? How can we help guide that process of learning forward? A final question that we like to ask all of our guests is what you're reading right now. So what texts or resources you might recommend to our listeners around these ideas that you've been sharing. So Tracy, to start with you, what are you reading?
All right, so full disclosure, because I bought the book in December and I recognize it's almost March and I'm only a couple of chapters in, but the title of the book is Street Data. It has a longer title. So Street Data, a Next Generation Model for Equity, Pedagogy, and School Transformation. And I'm hoping I'm saying the authors correctly, Jamila Duggan and Shane Safir. And I think what hooked me into getting that book is it talked about what I had mentioned with my multi-language learners feeling marginalized by a lot of assessments. And one of the quotes in this book, the authors talk about what is measurable is not always valuable. And they talk about gathering data from the margins. So that's soft data. And they're really passionate about the idea of humanizing assessment and making sure that we're not leaving students behind for the sake of just collecting data. So that's what I'm hoping to finish by June.
The humans behind the data. Again, who are the humans that we're working with? I love that. And Martha, what have you been reading?
Well, I can think of a couple of things to recommend that readers, listeners might find helpful. One thing that sort of on the more theoretical side is some work that Heidi Andrade and Susan Brookhart have been doing around that idea of assessment as the co-regulation of learning. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at assessment, right? The idea that students are regulating their own learning, but also teachers are involved in the co-regulation of that learning. Peers are involved in the co-regulation of that learning. The learning environment is part of the co-regulation of learning. And I just find it a really rich area to dig into. But also doing lots of reading and thinking in the area of culturally responsive assessments. So Catherine Taylor's book, Culturally and Socially Responsible Assessment, really a little bit, you know, the theory's there, but it's a little bit more practical in its focus. So I think that for those of you who are actively engaged in teaching, you'll probably find that useful as well if you want to take a deep dive into the area of more culturally and socially responsible assessment. It's been a big focus in a lot of the settings where I'm working. So those are two of the things that I think are enriching the way I'm thinking about the work that I do.
Fantastic. Well, we will link those in the podcast description so that folks can access those. I want to thank you both so much for sharing the work that you were doing with classroom teachers and pre-service teachers and educators in different spaces around all sorts of things they're doing for their formative assessment practice. Thank you so much for spending some of your time chatting with us today.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Thanks, Michael.